Hope you're having a good Thursday. Coming up, John Talty is going to join us, national college sports reporter for CBS. Some changes in college football we got to talk about, and we will, with John coming up in about 10 minutes. Meanwhile, Bill Polian's son, his name's Brian, has come out in defense of his father, who Bill Polian discussed his vote for Bill Belichick in the Hall of Fame and the selection process on Sirius and other places, Mike, after he caught a lot of criticism. And Brian says, "My father is a public figure and polarizing. I understand and accept that. However, what has happened over the last couple of days is not right. The facts and the truth are important." So he comes out and basically is talking about all these shows. First Take, Schefter, Bill Simmons, Dan Le Batard, that have been critical, Mike. And he goes on, Stephen A. Right. There's a bunch of shows about how this played out for Bill Polian. His son is coming out in defense. But look, what has happened here, and Mike, I don't know if you agree with this, Polian has become the face of this event.
Yes, and maybe what's wrong with it if you are in Belichick's corner. But to go and say something like, you know, I can't remember with 100% certainty whether I vote. There's only like six guys on this ballot. You know, I mean, you can't say with 100% certainty whether you voted. He said he was 95% sure he voted for Bell. Okay, well, take some more ginkgo biloba, Bill. Like, well, I know you know spring chicken, but I mean, come on.
Does that stuff work, by the way?
I don't know. You take those brain pills? I take something I get over the counter at Publix.
I've tried. I don't know if it helps with your memory. Because, right, yeah. You're supposed to be memory. Is that right?
Yes.
Something like that.
Because, you know, Carl always laughs. There'll be like a name, and it's like a splinter in my brain, like that line from The Matrix, and I'll butcher a name, and I'll lock in, and I'll always juxtapose a guy's name.
Yeah.
The steak does it, like, well, 50 times during the show. It's one of those things, so I try to take the brain pills to prevent myself. I hope it's working.
I do, too.
I hope it's working.
Like, I've tried some of that stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, all these supplements these days, I mean, you could take something for everything.
How many pills you take in a day? How many vitamins, everything? How many things you take in the morning? Not as much as that dude on the Netflix special. He's taking like 6,000 pills a day.
No, but I do take, I mean, look, I'm being on DC, all that, right. Like, I do take a lot of stuff. I'm not going to lie, probably 10 pills?
I think I'm at over a dozen. I got a dozen bottles on the little whirly gig I got in the bathroom.
Zinc. I'm taking all this stuff.
Like, you get your vitamin D from the sun, even on a cold day. You don't get out there in the sun.
Yeah.
But still, I'm with you. Yeah.
No, I take quite a bit. Now you got me thinking. I'm going to go home and be like,
I can't remember how many vitamins I took. I might need more memory pills. Day-Day, are you one of those vitamin freaks?
I wouldn't say freak, but I do take vitamin D. And vitamin C, I will, like, because I'm a germaphobe. I don't like. Right. I just hate being sick. I don't like to catch colds.
I take a Zycam every morning. Yeah, one of those things. Just, you know, you're never always
worried about
it.
Well, that's the other thing I didn't used to take, and now I do, is the damn allergy pill every day.
Right. Yeah, right? Now my kids, they got to take the allergy stuff.
Yeah,
they
man.
Get it bad.
I take that. But yeah, this whole memory thing, I don't know.
But anyway, so Polian, he could claim I'm getting old when they're going to take the vote away.
Right,
his,
right, right.
But it just, two things, again, it can be true. He's the greatest coach to ever dress out, but he's also a cheater. And there was going to be, in the minds of some fans, we just forgot about it. We just focused on his girlfriend and all the silliness in his life since he left the Patriots.
Yep.
And, of course, before that, the bigger debate was him versus Brady. What does him do without Brady? But this thing still stuck, I guess, in the craw of a lot of folks, at least 10 or 11 voters who said no. But you can't make it personal. That's what the NFL released, or the Hall of Fame, I should say, released.
Okay.
But good luck with that.
No, I was going to say, that's unrealistic. Let me tell you why Barry Bonds is not in the Hall. It's personal. Has nothing to do with whether he was the greatest player of his era. Ask about him. Ask the people who pitched against him. Ask the people who played against him. This is personal. And Mike, I don't know how you keep that human bias out of this when it comes to a guy like Belichick. And let me say this, too. Whether it's fair or unfair, Mike, if we're boys and I had an encounter with Belichick and he was a jerk, and I tell you, fellow member of the media,
right,
man, Belichick was a jerk, bro. Like, let me tell you what happened. You may not ever speak with him, but fast forward, and now you have a vote whether you've dealt with him or not, and many of those guys in the room did not. Of course you know about his career, mm-hmm. but not everybody in the room covered Bill Belichick for the 20 years he was in New England. A lot of this, Mike, is just secondhand stories and things that have happened, and then the things that we know about, which we discussed extensively on this show yesterday. You take all of that into account. Good luck taking the human side of this out of it when – it's almost impossible to say, all right, yeah, I know his credentials are there, but you know what, Manny? I know a bunch of guys he treated like a jerk, and I don't know.
Yeah, and I saw, you know, there was another guy that I want to say it was either in Arizona or I think it was Arizona, and he put his ballot out there and he said, I voted for Ken Anderson, and Ken Anderson is kind of like...
Why? Because he felt guilty?
And Elsie Green, what Elsie Green, what I love with the Steelers.
I do too.
But I mean, why? Because they waited longer?
That was the excuse.
That was the excuse. And by the way, Ken Anderson is like Jim Harbaugh. I mean, went to a Super Bowl. Ken Anderson, great. For older, younger guys, you won't remember him. You know, the Bengals team, he was a quarterback, took a beating for years, and finally they got good, lost to San Francisco, Joe Montana and Bill Walsh's first Super Bowl win. But he's kind of like a Philip Rivers, you know, in that sense. And of course, none of the passing yards will match up with today's game, Carl, because the game changed. But yeah, okay, good pull, and you feel for the older guys. But Belichick's first ballot. But you know, that's the thing. Even if you're tating, he still won 7 Super Bowls, 5 as a head coach, 2 as a defensive coordinator. Unless you feel, Carl, and you're privy to the information that he was working on the margins his entire career, and he never stopped cheating.
No doubt. As we're talking about this, I want you to hear Tom Brady. Let's get to 4th and 1. Here is what Tom Brady said about his former coach not being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
If he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, there's really no coach that should ever be a first ballot Hall of Famer, which is completely ridiculous because people deserve it, and he's incredible. There's no coach I'd ever want to play for. I'd rather play for. If I'm picking one coach to go out there to win a Super Bowl, give me one season, I'm taking Bill Belichick.
Okay. I mean, obviously. What else is he going to say? Come on.
He's a bum. You know,
I mean, come on. But Belichick and Brady, and now Brady, of course, is stepping up for his guy who treated him like crap.
He did.
That's out there, guys. You can read up on it. I mean, documented. The New England media was all over it. He treated everybody like. See, that's the other side. The golden rule does count for something. How you do unto others as you know the drill. But that's not what the voting's supposed to be about. According to the mandate from the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, look, it's going to be interesting to see, again, if there are wholesale changes across the board. Other things that are happening, Bo Nix says he'll have absolutely no issues when he returns from his injury. Did you guys see this where Sean Payton was like, it wasn't a matter of if, it was when? Like, he had this predisposition, I guess, of some kind of injury or bones or something. And this was going to happen, Mike. Whether it happened in that championship game, it was bound to happen as doctors got in there and were like, oh, this was going to happen for you. So he says he'll be back, and look, it won't have any issues with him returning and getting ready for camp.
And Sean Payton, now, is he just, boy, is he in a bitter pill mood. You see this stuff coming out of Sean Payton's mouth? Well, yeah, I think Bo's kind of predisposed to that kind of injury.
He's blaming everybody. I want to say he's blaming. He fired a couple of guys on his staff, but I feel like, Mike, he's catching heat for the first. Everybody's been like, oh, Sean's such a genius, and this is great. And then that game happened, and everybody's like, yeah, you kind of blew it.
Joe Lombardi, the OC, goes, yeah, Payton was in one of those moods where he felt like some changes needed to be made.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're great.
He had a bad taco?
It's a snowy day. You know the under was the play, and you got Jared Stidham at quarterback. And you decided to go forwards at a 3. And then you fire everybody on the staff and start throwing. And just, that's why, look, Sean Payton, another guy like Belichick, tremendous football, not mine. Genius. Absolute weasel. Absolute just ethics bypass at birth.
Josh Allen also had a procedure Monday. Says he had a broke bone in his foot.
Oof.
Which he re-aggravated against the Browns. So he'll be fine, and we know Joe Brady's going to be the new coach there. And then also, this is something that I think we're going to be watching the entire offseason into the season next year. Todd Monken and how this situation plays out with Shedeur Sanders. Because, Mike, you already have folks on social media going in, professionals in the business, going in on Todd Monken and how he's going to handle this. I don't know what people want, how they want Shedeur to be coached. I don't know. And I don't know if Todd Monken will have success there. But I am curious, just as a sidebar, Mike, to kind of peek over there and go, hey, what's going on with the Browns? Because if it's a crap show, it just is another testament to what Kevin Stefanski was going through.
Now, just to wrap up, you know, the Cleveland debacle, you know, and they'll be watching Stefanski to see how he does here. And we might, again, all the things we've said about our organization being dysfunctional until Arthur finally, you know, basically got the Sportology guys to kind of roto-rooter all the nonsense out of the system. maybe we'll be have it together. But Cleveland, now the word comes out, they did have the test, but not everybody had to do the essay, but there was an essay. And they're trying to, because they know how bad that looks. And then you find out that they recommended the passing game coordinator from the Rams, but Haslam wouldn't sign off on it.
Nope.
And Haslam said, so basically they presented with all the information. He goes, I'm going with that guy, and he's going with Munkin. So we'll see. And they still believe that Deshaun Watson can come in and battle for that job with Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel.
So I know we had a lot of discussions about the Raiders and who they might hire. They're still sitting there. But Clint Kubiak apparently is going to do an interview over the weekend for their head coaching job.
If he pulls a Ben Johnson, sounds like they're screwed. I mean, if he goes back to the Seahawks.
Because it feels like they're waiting. And maybe there is some connection there with him and Brady. We don't know. I have no idea. But we've been talking about this Kubiak thing, and now all of a sudden the Raiders are going to have another interview, or they plan at least having an interview with Kubiak. All right, we'll see where that goes, because they have the number one overall pick.
What's your plan B?
I have no idea.
And Raheem may get the Arizona job.
Correct. Yep. I, if you're the Raiders, I don't know. I won't say it's slim pickings, Mike, but when you start talking about, do we have a guy foundationally that we feel like can be here and help build this thing and get it where it needs to be, or are we talking about another gap coach? Are we talking about the Raiders firing another coach in a year and a half, and then, we wanted to get this guy?
Or is Mike McDaniel going to say, I'm sorry, I'm leaving the Chargers again for another interview to go be a head coach? I don't know. Tom Brady's, what the reports are accurate, you read that he is riding shotgun on this thing.
Yeah. McDaniel's not going to. Did you see his presser he had with the Chargers a little bit? He was like, I'm not an opening statement kind of guy. Well, we got that when you were in Miami. We kind of picked up on that already.
You know, bro. I mean, winning is like as a concept, as a construct. You know, to win is what we all aspire for. How do we win, though? Do we win when we win? Can we lose and win?
That's a very interesting Mike McDaniel.
He did an interview, like a little Q&A thing before after he got hired with the PR people, the staff from the Chargers.
Yeah.
And one of the questions he asked, he's like, what's your daily routine? He goes, I like to do everything that avoids human interaction I deal with humans.
Recluse, man.
You know, time is a flat circle, and in another parallel universe, I may have already won the Super Bowl with the Chargers.
Yeah, you might have. Hey, man, 4th and 1 brought to you by our friends at Priority Men's Medical Centers. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. Hey, do we have time to play this? Because I think it's something that's going to happen. Michael Strahan hinting that he's going to retire from Good Morning America. Mike wants to free up his schedule a little bit. Here's Strahan.
What's next? What is the next thing for Michael Strahan?
Hey, retirement.
Like full, just all around work.
Nah, man, I ain't done with everything.
There's no way.
You know what? Yeah, they're in the way at some point. Some point, man. You know what it is? I love Fox. I absolutely love that. But I just want to, he works so much. And then I want to go here. I want to go there. And I can't do a lot of things because I got these commitments and schedule stuff. And I think at some point, I have to look at time lived and time left.
Well, I mean, you could argue that, you know, like people always say, how many yachts can you water ski behind? Good Morning America, Fox NFL Sunday, the $100,000 pyramid. You know, I mean, look, you got to strike while the iron's hot. If people are throwing money at you to do, how can you say no to that? Because it's stealing money. It's basically stealing money.
The only part is you still got to get up at 2
yes,
or 3 a.m. in the morning.
That's the rub.
But he's right. It would not surprise me here in the near future if he steps away from Good Morning America. All right, man, coming up, we're going to talk college football. John Talty, national college sports reporter for CBS, will join us. We'll talk SEC, Big Ten, playoff, and much more coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk some college football because there is a lot going on, and we wanted to get our man John Talty on. He's a national college sports reporter for CBS. And since the national championship game played out, obviously now with the portal closing and all that's been going on, good time to talk with John. John, thanks for joining us here on Dukes and Bell. I got to start with these changes to the college football playoff in 26. So each Power Four champion gets an automatic bid. The highest group of 16, regardless of their conference championship, gets an automatic bid. And then the one that people are like, wait a minute, Notre Dame guaranteed bid if they're ranked in the top 12. How do you feel about these changes? And is this really going to help the playoff as far as how you see it?
I don't really see how it helps the playoff. And I think what it does is it highlights, you know, a lot of the lack of transparency. We were talking about this on our show on CBS Sports the other day. Like, you know, a lot of even like group of five ADs weren't necessarily aware of the fact that it was just the highest ranked team, not even necessarily a conference champion. The Notre Dame thing, I think, caught people off guard when that came out in a Yahoo Sports story after Notre Dame got left out. So it shows that, like, even people who are directly involved in this world, who make money having to know these things, didn't necessarily know the specifics, which makes it hard to plan things in advance. And, you know, it's just one of the many issues I think that's probably plaguing college sports right now, where, like, sometimes you just don't even know what you're dealing with. But I don't know that it helps to know that Notre Dame's getting in automatically within that top 12. That, you know, is not applicable to other teams potentially in the same situation.
And John, we've been under the impression the only reason that you get the group of five or six, depending on how you look at it, in this thing is so they don't get sued. Because, you know, it's basically a marketing company that runs the college football playoff, and the idea that if you kept somebody out from the Sun Belt or Pac-12 who was undefeated. But again, I think historically we don't want to see this. The rematch of the Ole Miss Tulane was a waste of everybody's time.
I was there, can confirm. It was a great day at Oxford. It was beautiful, a lot of fans. I mean, that's probably the highlight of it. But you're right, and I think that's something that is, you know, part of the challenge. And listen, it's not just related to that. Like, I can tell you when, you know, a year ago, there was momentum at one point for this model that was going to be heavier on automatic qualifiers, where, you know, the Big Ten and SEC were going to get four or so teams, and then the Big 12 and ACC were going to get two or so. And, you know, the Big Ten and SEC have control over the format, but, you know, the Big 12 and ACC were both indicating behind the scenes, like, if they go ahead of this, we would strongly consider suing. So kind of anything you do right now in this world, it's like, well, if we do this, we're going to get sued. If we do that, we're going to get sued. And at a certain point, you either just do what you think is right and say, bring on the lawsuits, or you have to kind of just keep navigating around it. And I do think, you know, the first round games were not great. And I think games got better as time went on. And I think that's in part because of, you know, better matchups that people wanted to see. And, we, you know, kind of a unique circumstance. But having Tulane and James Madison in did not lead to the greatest matchups this year.
John Talty joining us, national college sports reporter for CBS, guys. John, what is the deal with the SEC and the Big Ten in regards to expansion? Why it's not happening? What does the Big Ten want? What does the SEC want? And when do you see expansion happening?
Yeah, it's going to continue to hang over the sport. And it's one of the things that I think is, again, frustrating for people that, you know, I was covering a national championship in Miami, and, you know, the day before the national championship, we're waiting on commissioners to tell us whether there's going to be expansion or not. And I don't know that that is necessarily healthy. Imagine if the day before the Super Bowl, all the talk is about, is the playoffs going to expand in the NFL? Like, I think it takes away some of the attention around the sport. So in some ways, you want them to just figure it out so we don't have to live in this year to year, are they going to expand or are they not, which has been hanging over the sport, you know, for years now. Right now, the challenge is that the Big Ten and the SEC have the power to change the format, but they have to be on the same page. There have been times over the last year that they at least seem to be on the same page. Right now, they're very much not on the same page. And where the breakdown is currently is that the SEC wants to go to 16 teams. That's a generally popular and accepted move. There's other conferences, including the ACC and Big 12, that are on board with that idea. And the Big Ten is at a position of, we'll go to 16 now, but we want a commitment within the next 3 years or so to go to 24 teams. And the SEC has said, we can't do that. And the Big Ten has gone, well, okay, we can't go to 16 then. And so you're in a bit of a standoff right now where the SEC would very much like to go to 16, and I think the Big Ten would ultimately as well. But if you look at it from the Big Ten standpoint, they've won the last three national championships with three different teams. They are very well positioned moving forward, especially with that kind of high-end, top-tier team. They have leverage, and they don't have to move off this 12 team unless they feel like they're getting something out of it. Mm. And right now, that is wanting a commitment to moving to 24 teams ultimately.
It is the John Talty guys with us from CBS Sports, CBSSports.com. One of the other things that's going on, of course, is name, image, likeness. And thanks for – I learned something the other day reading your article. I thought when you signed that contract, it's a contract to play football. It's about name, image, likeness. I'm talking about the Mensa lawsuit, the Donnybrook between Miami and North Carolina, and you kind of lay it out there. It's not as simple as I think people think it is.
Yeah, it's what makes it complicated, and I think it's why you continue to see people suggest, can we get to a world in which we have collective bargaining? Because these schools are trying to thread such a needle right now where, you know, they want people to be locked into these deals to play football, but they can't say explicitly, like, you know, we want you to be employees and play football, because they don't want to give the players employment status. So they try to find these workarounds, which, you know, we can clearly see they are intended to be for payment for football on-field performance and not simply just what their NIL is worth. But they have to kind of use that to lock them into these deals. And so what it does, it just creates a lot of, you know, big questions around whether these things are actually enforceable. Yeah. And we got close to getting a real challenge with the Mensa situation. Ultimately, they just agreed to a buyout with terms that we, you know, we don't know, but assume are pretty close to what he would have been paid this past year, this upcoming year, excuse me. But it just leads to a lot of kind of open-ended questions of, you know, whether there's stability in any of these contracts the way that coaches and administrators want.
John, do you think, how do you feel about what you're hearing about Lane Kiffin at LSU? Do you think he is going to have the kind of year that the expectations, they're off the charts, right? I mean, they just are. And look, mm-hmm. it almost feels like he steps in there, and if he doesn't win it this year, they're going to turn on him, you know, a season right. in. What are you hearing about Lane, the class, the NIL folks, you know, all the things that have happened there at LSU?
I think it's playoff or bust in year one for him, honestly. They have one of the most expensive rosters in college football. I would put it at $40 million plus this year. They have made significant financial commitments. I mean, if you look at just Sam Leavitt, the quarterback, and Jordan Seaton, the offensive tackle, from the sources that I've talked to, just between the two of those guys, that's more than $8 million right there. So they've made a big-time commitment. He has put together the number one transfer portal class in the country, according to 24/7 Sports. So they want to win. That's why he was brought in there. That's why Brian Kelly was brought in and ultimately was fired, because he couldn't meet those playoff or bust expectations. So that's what I think is going to take in year one, given the financial outlay that they've made. And I think what is really interesting about it is that Lane Kiffin has not been under this level of pressure really since the USC days. You know, he's bounced around a lot since then. Certainly being Nick Saban's offensive coordinator comes with a lot of pressure and attention. I'm not saying he hasn't had pressure, but at Ole Miss, he had a pretty good thing going. There was not this playoff or bust pressure. He could, you know, kind of exceed expectations, certainly from where he got there. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that, how he handles maybe that first loss where fans get pretty upset with him. He just has not dealt with that in a very long time.
Yeah, the other thing with the whole thing you just talked about, the payroll, we're under the impression there's sort of like a salary cap that's enforced by the NCAA. Is this like a moving target?
Yes, it is, because here's where it's at. You have the kind of the salary cap type thing, which is right now it's $20.5 million. I think it's supposed to go up to maybe around $21.5 million in the coming year. But then you have this whole other NIL world, which is what, you know, we've kind of been accustomed to for the last 4 or 5 years before revenue share went in. And this is the first year that we've really had alleged enforcement of it. And what I think we're about to experience is whether this kind of thing that they've created, which is called the College Sports Commission, whether they actually enforce some of these deals that do not seem to make sense to, you know, marketing experts and other people that I've talked to. It's kind of been a free-for-all, which is why you can have a team which is in the $40 million range, as I've been told. Obviously, you know, I'm not a math guy, but $40 million is a lot more than $20.5 million, right? So they have to be getting a lot of additional NIL money to make that happen. And to this point, those things have worked, but I would not be surprised if this spring, when some of those big NIL deals get submitted, if they were rejected, which could put, you know, both players and schools in some tricky positions, especially when it comes to eligibility. So that's something that you hear more and more from people in the industry of, like, this spring is going to be interesting to see whether these deals actually get approved and go through.
John, everybody thought, most people at least thought, if Alabama lost that DeBoer was going to leave, the Michigan job was open, then it wasn't. How safe is he? What are you hearing there with Alabama now that we get to the offseason? What's the roster look like before we let you get out of here? Because there's a lot of talk amongst Alabama fans about, well, this, that, and the other, the quarterback, Ty Simpson leaving, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I live in the state of Alabama, and anytime Alabama loses, it's like a national emergency here. So any loss that he has next year will provoke that feeling. And frankly, I've been a bit disappointed with what they've done this offseason. I would have liked for them to have gone out and gotten a transfer portal QB, someone who was experienced. They're relying on a guy who, one, was a, you know, five-star recruit, very highly regarded, very well reviewed internally, but has played basically nothing. And then Austin Mack, who was a transfer who came with DeBoer from Washington, who has also played very sparingly. Like, I just feel like in a make or break year, I would want someone more experienced and with more, you know, kind of just game field experience and what they have. So that was a bit surprising to me. You know, they really needed to add a running back. They had this kid Hollywood Smothers committed. He ended up flipping to Texas. That was a big loss. So I feel like it's been a tough offseason, honestly, for Alabama. And I think he enters the year certainly on a warmish seat. I think hot seat's a little too premature. But, you know, if they do not take a step next year, if the offense looks bad, I think his seat could get toasty by the end.
Got about 30 seconds left with John Talty from CBS Sports talking college ball. Kirby, what we've been sold by some Georgia folks is that Kirby's building it the old-fashioned way. And you'll have upperclassmen next year, and they supplement with when they need with the transfer portal. But do you believe Kirby can win another natty next season?
Yeah, I do. I just think that we've seen that there's more parity specifically in the SEC, and it's hard when you've got to kind of beat up on all of these different teams. So I'm never going to doubt on Kirby. I think he is, you know, one of the best coaches clearly in the sport. But I do feel like we have seen – Georgia a little bit behind when it comes to, you know, aggressive NIL spending. And I think it has impacted them a bit, and it is something that he certainly has to overcome moving forward.
John, always good to talk with you. Great job. Make sure you follow him, guys. National College Sports Reporter, CBS Sports. We will talk soon, John. Appreciate you.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Cool. All right. Good stuff. Interesting about Alabama. Just interesting.
Yeah, we've talked about it. A lot of stuff to fix. You know, a lot of stuff. I mean, that's why we talk about the trenches and all that. I mean, everybody's always talking about the skill position.
Ooh.
Maybe DeBoer should have taken that Michigan job.
Alabama!
Why do you hate Alabama so much?
Oh, my goodness. All right, coming up, what's on Day-Day's mind when we get back? Interesting.